Well, this is Jan Scruggs, founder of the National Vietnam Veterans Memorial in Washington, D.C. Beautiful place to take your friends and relatives when you come into our beautiful town. And it is nicely placed right near the Lincoln Memorial, which was my hope 40 years ago, and somehow or another we got it built. Anyway, I'm honored to be the man to introduce you to Randall Ark. Randall Ark, not just your regular Ark, but something more complex. So, Randy Ark, why don't you tell everyone where you grew up and what you did when you got out of high school and whether or not Uncle Sam wanted to draft you to help him fight this war in Vietnam?
Well, I grew up on a farm just outside of Springfield. Went to Greenan High School and graduated in 1966. And I had a good high school career, athletics and stuff.
Yeah.
I started that fall of 66 at Wright State College. It was a college then, not a university yet. There were only four buildings there.
Yeah.
And I was headed to get a degree, and I was determined I was going to do that, but all of a sudden I lost interest in studying. I didn't want to go to school anymore.
Yeah.
And so my grades went down. I got on probation and I got drafted in November 1967. And back then, if you got drafted, this was before the lottery. If you got drafted, your choices were Marines or Army. That was about it. That really wasn't a choice. They were So I decided I really wanted to be in the Army because my dad was in the Army in World War II. I wanted to kind of follow that, his lead. So I signed up for another year and decided to be a medic. My naivete about the service kind of kicked in, and I kept thinking, well, if I'm a medic, if I go to Nam, I'll probably be in an air conditioned hospital with nurses, pretty nurses. Naive.
Yeah. Where did they send you? What was your job over there?
They sent me to a medical battalion at first, and we did a week of jungle school. And then we hung around with other medics for maybe a month or two, doing aid stations and stuff like that. Nothing, you know, occasionally there'd be rockets coming in, but they could have been anywhere. I finally got assigned to a field unit, what it was called, a mobile artillery unit, set up fire bases and stuff like that. And so I was the only medic in the battery. And that's what I was there to do. So I was okay with that. It was a good group of guys. And that's where, I don't know, what else do you want to know about that?
Well, it sounds to me like you could get yourself hurt being a combat medic in Vietnam. We had a medic, actually two medics in one day. One was shot in the throat and the other one was shot right behind the eye.
Ooh.
Somehow or another, the bullet in the throat didn't hit his jugular vein, and he went on to medical school in Puerto Rico. Yeah. The guy who got shot in the eye, it actually did permanent damage to the part of the brain that has to do with short-term memory. So. But rest in peace. So what did you think about the Vietnamese people? Do you have any time to spend with them? I know we tried to give polio shots and things like that.
You know what? In the battalion, medical battalion, we went on what we called med caps.
Yeah.
And we went out to villages and stuff to treat the people. There was usually an infantry unit that went along with us to kind of set up a perimeter. And the kids and the mama-sons, They would come from all around, and we'd set up in this shelter or something they had out there. It looked like it was built by the French. But I even had a picture taken of one of the kids coming and didn't have a stitch of clothes on. Nothing, no shoes, no pants, yeah. Nothing.
They were very poor.
Yeah, yeah. And I bandaged one kid up. His legs had got something happened to his knees or something. I bandaged him up, and he followed me around the rest of the day. he was my buddy.
Yeah.
You know, you wonder what happened to those kids like that.
Yeah.
But anyway, we would treat different villages, and that was, and they were glad, but sometimes it was a two-edged sword, because the Viet Cong would come in at night, you know, if we gave them anything.
Yeah.
It would be gone, but they were willing to risk it to get treated. With penicillin was a wonder drug over there.
Oh.
So we were treating Mama Sons and the, you know, prostitutes also.
Yeah.
So, yeah, that was my experience with the villagers. Of course, they were around the base camp.
Yeah.
They, you know, did laundry and all that kind of stuff.
Yeah, yeah. Very nice. Did you ever have to go out with a regular rifle company?
I'm trying to think. I think I did. And I don't know if this counts, but it was in jungle school.
Yeah.
But that was, I remember we got, we were in like a lower level between two cliffs, and we were in the water up to our neck just about. And there was a firefight going on up above.
Oh, no.
Green tracers and red tracers back and forth. And, I got separated with this other guy, but we found our way back to the patrol, and everybody was covered with leeches. I mean, covered. And you couldn't get them off right then because of the firelight. You can't be lighting a match or nothing.
Yeah.
And so we had to wait till we got back to our training area. But I don't remember any more than that. We didn't do any recons or anything that I remember, but Jan, there's a whole lot I don't remember, and I don't know why.
Yeah.
It seems like after a whole year, you know, I would remember more that happened than I can remember.
Yeah. So do you think your time in Vietnam caused PTSD, or do you not have it?
Well, I'm on 100% disability, and PTSD was part of it.
Mm-hmm.
You know, I don't know about you, but there's hardly a day go by that I don't remember something in Vietnam. Think about it.
Yeah.
Think about a guy. Think about it being in the bunker.
Mm-hmm.
My duties as a medic in our compound there. I had a very good friend of mine accidentally shoot himself in the head with my .45. He was in the bunker. I wasn't in the bunker at the time, but he was just playing around with the .45. He just turned 18.
Don't do that.
And ended up years later, I went to California with my wife and daughter. And we met with that young man's mother and brothers and sisters in California. And that was one of the best things I ever did.
Yeah.
For them and me.
Yeah. Well, they probably really needed to.
Yeah, they really didn't get a straight scoop from the Army for what happened to him. So,
yeah. You got to be careful of those 45 automatics because, you know, when you put the clip in, then you put the bullet in the chamber.
Yeah.
It's pretty easy for your trigger finger to slip right and have it go off because I saw it happen.
And you got to squeeze the rear of the handle. It has to be depressed also.
Yes. Everything's had to go wrong at the same time.
Yeah.
My God, a U.S. soldier will figure out how to screw it up. Well, I enjoyed my time over there, just 12 months. So just primarily shooting mortars, but some riflemen stuff. So you were
in a mortar crew?
Yeah. Yeah, we had 81 millimeter mortars.
Okay.
We never took them anywhere. But we did have an incident in which 12 guys were killed in like 15 minutes. They had all died.
I remember you writing that.
Yeah.
Reading that.
All yeah. Right. That really had a big effect on me and still does.
Sure.
Yeah. But so tell us about your life now in beautiful Ohio. What's the name of your little town you're in there?
Springfield.
Yeah. And what are they known for?
Oh, at one time in history, they were one of the big industrial giants in the whole country with factories and stuff that they had with the making reapers and all kinds of farm equipment. And in fact, we had the second largest factory under one roof in the entire world. And the largest factory was in, I think, Krupp, Germany.
Yes.
Something like that. And it was a very affluent place. A lot of innovators, a lot of entrepreneurs and stuff like that. Now it's starting to build up a little bit. You know, people want things to happen too fast, I think. But you know, there's some more shops that are setting up downtown. The mall closed down, and more things are going downtown now, which is the way it was when I was younger.
Yeah.
But it's to me, it's a nice town. I've never had any. It wouldn't be like living in Detroit or, you know, some of the places that they're getting overrun now with illegal immigrants and stuff.
So. Yeah. So what kind of interactions do you have with veterans nowadays, particularly some of the guys who are coming back from these recent wars in places like Afghanistan and so forth? Tell us about anything you do in that regard.
Well, I wish we had more contact with Afghan and Iraq guys. Wherever they were, mostly my contact early on was with World War II Korea veterans, trying to get them, more things going for them than they knew about. Because when they got out, some of them didn't even have a DD-214. They had what was called separation papers.
Oh, that's right.
And people would call me. Once they found out, I was kind of like a veteran advocate, and people would call me and ask about things. I had people calling from California, from Utah, really. And this is what's going on. What's my first step here? What should I do? You know, and all they wanted was a direction. That's mostly. And one time I got a great big book in the mail. It was heavy, and it was a big book on the Holocaust.
Mm.
I mean, pictures, everything. And it was from a guy in Atlanta whose brother I helped up here in Springfield.
Yeah.
And he wanted to give me something to, you know, say thank you. That's pretty cool. So.
Yeah.
But my contact, like I said, The memberships and the VFWs and stuff, I don't know what if you're involved in that much, but it's going down. The new guys aren't getting very involved at all, and I wasn't for a while, and you were too. But
yeah, it's too bad because the VFW and groups like that, they do a really good job. I mean, they make things happen. People who need help. Short term or long term, great advocates.
And we have stuff going on that they can come to. We advertise it.
Yeah.
And we put it on the TV screens at the medical block that, you know, that's here in Springfield. Yeah. So we're trying real hard to get people involved and get them in at least to talk to somebody.
Good. Yeah. Well, I think you've had a pretty good career. I've even heard rumors that you are being considered for veteran of the year. Is that correct?
Veteran of the year?
Veteran of the week, maybe.
Unless you heard, the only thing, I think the most recent thing I had was I get into these Hall of Fames. I got in my high school Hall of Fame for the work that I did with veterans after graduation.
Oh, I see.
And I got into the Ohio Military Hall of Fame for Valor, which is like I was telling you about earlier, because of the Archon with a V.
Yes.
And you said that you had also had one of those.
Yes.
But Veteran of the Year, I don't know. Yeah. That'd be a new one.
So what's it like? Had you ever seen anyone die before you went to the Vietnam War?
Grandparents.
Yeah.
That was about it. Relatives.
And how many times did you see fatalities over there?
Oh, golly. Once in the medical battalion,
yeah,
we went to a place called Phuc Vinh, and there was like a MASH unit there. Mm. And we were in a big area that was full of cots and beds and stuff. And they said, they're bringing in the stiffs.
No.
That's what they called them. I said, what the heck? What's that? They said, you know, the bodies, we don't give them names. I guess nowadays they call them angels.
Oh.
But anyway, they brought them in and some were dying, you know. But we were assigned to treat whatever we could treat. And one of the guys was my squad leader I had in boot camp.
Yeah.
He was shot 3 times with an AK.
Yeah.
Once in each leg and once at the base of his spine.
Oh.
And he heard my voice. And he goes, "Hey, Randy." I said, "What?" And I went over there and I said, "Oh, man." He goes, "How bad is it?" And I said, "Well, you're not bleeding. Blood's not pouring out. So that's good." But I told him, you know, where he was shot. And you know, what do you say? I wish him well and just hang in there, you know. And
mm-hmm. Did it miss the spinal cord?
I don't know.
Yeah.
It was right on top of it.
Yeah.
But as far as, like I said, there's a whole bunch I forgot. And I remember the main artillery or the rocket mortar barrage the night that I got wounded. We had like 17 or 18 wounded.
Oh, God.
That night.
And you were the only medic.
And I was the only medic, and I was new in the battery.
Congratulations.
Yeah. And that's why I'm running in the dark. This buck sergeant who looked like Wally Cleaver, he was leading me to all the bunkers. And the only light we had was the flashes from the rockets and mortars going off. It's about 100 yards to run to the first bunker.
Yeah.
And, I don't know why I don't remember more than I do. I mean, the thing that they wrote up on me, they said, okay, he was in this bunker, he did this, and then he heard there was 8 more in another bunker. I don't remember that. But they wrote it, you know?
It was their way of saying thank you for your service, you know?
I give tons of credit to those guys on the guns.
Yeah.
Because they were having firing missions while we were under attack.
Oh, yeah.
And they ran out there, even though they knew they'd probably get wounded, which they did.
Which they did.
I'll never forget that. Those guys taking off. Hey, we got a fire mission. And you hear outside, you know.
Yeah.
Explosions.
You call those mortars in just perfect, and you
yeah, yeah,
a lot of people up.
Once you get the range,
yeah, man, it's pretty mathematical process.
Were you guys pretty good at that?
Yeah, we were certainly above average. Yeah, we had quite a few. This was there in 1970, so probably half of the guys in the mortar platoon had some college training. You know,
okay,
so. But they'd all been drafted. A couple of guys who went the 2-year regular army thing, but getting people to volunteer for the infantry is a little tough. I watched this stuff going on in Ukraine, and I just say, oh my God, these guys are going to need PTSD help and everything else to recover from this.
Crazy yeah, that's for sure.
Okay, that's for sure. Randy, I want to thank you for telling us what it was all about in Vietnam, fighting in the Vietnam War. And as they say, thank you for your service. And
it's hard to tell what it's all about. You know that.
Yeah.
You know, with the smells and the.
Oh, yeah.
And the way you have to live, you know, you don't shower for a while. I had rats crawling on me about every night. In our bunker, they would come down out of the sandbags.
Yeah.
They only broke the skin on me once.
They're like athletes. They're unbelievable. Yeah.
They would nibble. They would wake you up by nibbling on your earlobe or your fingertips or your elbow. That's when I knew there were usually about 4 or 5 of them running around on my poncho. And, but they weren't big rats like they had up north.
Yeah.
I've heard horror stories up
there. Yeah. Yeah. There are a lot of things they didn't tell me about this Vietnam thing while I was there, but I sure found out a lot of it was very unpleasant. Crazy stuff.
Whenever I talk to kids in schools and I mentioned that.
Yeah.
That's the worst thing they can think of that could happen to you.
The army recruiter might shoot you. Oops.
Yep, yep.
I don't know. Looks like an accidental discharge. All right, we better go. So.
Okay.
I'll send you this when this is done.
I thank you so much for the invitation. Very, very much. And it's been a really pleasure to meet you also face to face.
Pleasure's all mine.